Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about, well, the only episode that's out. So there's no confusion. Season 1, episode 1. There's a lot of confusion, though, because there's no name on this episode. It's just called episode 1.
No name? No credit sequence? That's something that I was wondering if that was, you know, because I've only seen the press copy that was circulating, you know, at the time that I went out to see it in L.A. Mm-hmm. I knew there wasn't one there. You don't think that the intro is just going to be that, like, sigil with the flames behind it, and then that's just how everyone's going to start?
I'm surprised that there isn't more of an intro and that this doesn't have a name, given all the production value that's clearly all over this show. It feels like they'd won a big celebratory thing at the beginning, but maybe they feel like they haven't earned it yet.
Or maybe they thought there's no place, because I think the first season did have one. It was, you had the cold open of like what was going on beyond the wall, and Lord Royce getting his head chopped off, and the deserter fleeing the White Walkers. And I thought we went to the credits, but maybe not. Maybe not. It's not unprecedented for an HBO show to not have an intro sequence in the first episode, especially when it's a supersize. It's clocked in slightly over an hour tonight. Mm-hmm. But all that bullshit aside, Jim, I'm pregnant. I'm with child that I hope is not stillborn to know.
Yeah.
What did you think of this episode one, this titleless episode, this creditless episode of House of the Dragon, Hot D?
Let me assist you with something. I guess I'm going to call a D section for dragons. I don't know. I thought this was a very strong premiere. I thought it established the characters very well, especially the particular character of Daemon Targaryen. He seems like a real pill. And it set in motion kind of everything I need to know. And look, I know a little bit about the basic premise and then the setup here of what happens. I'm not going to like say anything about that, but I think it did a good job, if you're even slightly familiar with that, telling you, okay, they're going to get to this stuff pretty fast. It seems like there's one event, important event yet to take place that I was not necessarily expecting to happen in this first episode, but I was wondering how they would handle it. And I think, like, I don't know how soon that happens after these events, so I'm not like disappointed that we didn't see it or anything, because we get so many other pieces of setup here that it's totally fine. But I was a big fan of this episode. It felt a lot like Game of Thrones, a lot like early Game of Thrones.
I thought it felt confident. I thought it was pretty well written. There were some, you know, lines that I had a good chuckle over. There were some lines I thought were pretty badass. I thought the action was great. This is the second time I saw it, and I got to say, I enjoyed it even more, because the first time I saw this, I was just kind of gripped up with like, oh my God, I hope this isn't terrible. Oh my God, this is a lot of text. This is a lot of narration. But chill out. That's how Lord of the Rings started too. Fellowship started this way, and that was awesome. Uh-huh. And there, by the time we got to the tournament scene, I had completely relaxed and got it gripped up and absorbed in the episode.
Yeah, that tournament scene is great and infuriating in all the right ways.
Yeah. And it's just so much more illuminated than from the text, because like I alluded to, that's a one paragraph scene in the book, you know. Viserys experienced tragedy. His queen died in childbirth, and his male heir survived till the next day. And that's it. But it really comes alive on, and you really get, there's also just so many interesting things, because in the book, you get the pretty clear impression that Daemon's just partying it up. He is so happy that his brother's heir died and that he's the clear heir, and he's making this joke about the heir for a day. But when you see it in the show, like, he's really processing it. Like he's definitely in the middle of this brothel and people are having a good old time. But in his inner in his inner thoughts, he's hearing the screams of his brother's wife dying. And he's clearly like put on the spot when he's asked to give a speech. And, you know, he's got his public image, and you don't crucially hear what he actually says as he starts to toast to the king's. I'm sure heir for a day was in there. But like, there's a way to say that that's like somber and appropriate even for Damon. And I felt like the show did a really good job of showing that like he's not entirely one dimensional, and maybe he wanted to defend himself to his brother and he does care about his brother. But, you know, is this another instance of Otto Hightower manipulating the king, or is Damon actually there's a lot of there's a lot more shades of gray. And I feel like this is, it's a great way to capture the spirit of Fire and Blood, because Fire and Blood is all about, well, Septa and so-and-so says this and Maester so-and-so mm-hmm. this and the Fool Mushroom says this. You've still got the shades of gray and that kind of, even yeah. though they, you know, I guess this is the definitive version of the history. I just thought it was great. I thought it was, it looked like $1 million
because they probably million,
spent,
perhaps?
They probably uh-huh. spent 20 on it. I thought that, you know, like the Kingsguard armor, recognizably Kingsguard, but very, very cool, a little bit throwback looking. I thought that the kids, you know, Alicent Hightower and Rhaenyrus, or Rhaenyra rather, were excellent. I love their chemistry. They really felt like they're pals. This is a great first episode. It does everything it needs to do. I think a fair-minded Game yeah. of Thrones fan walks away from this episode really hyped for the season to come, because it just perfectly sets the stage. It gets you, there's shit going down in you know, over the seas, there's mm-hmm. rumblings in Essos of this triarchy, and
there's secret messages being sent by Raven.
You've got a succession that's a mess. You've got rivalries between the brothers. You got rivalries between the aunts and uncles. You got, you know, a best BFF ship that is between the queen and Otto's daughter. But, you know, Otto's sending her into the chambers of the king. Mm-hmm. That felt gross and portentous. Mm-hmm. It's all there. And it looks amazing. I'm delighted. I'm delighted with this first episode.
I really love the complexity of some of the dynamics there, because he talked about, you know, Damon being not just this one dimensional guy who wants the throne at all costs, but like they're doing a lot more with that too, because you get the impression that, okay, maybe this king is not as bad as, let's say, Robert Baratheon
right.
Being a king, but clearly like there are some cracks around the edges, right? Like, why is Damon even involved in this council? You know, it's because, well, he has a soft spot for blood. And so like, you get the impression that when Damon tells him, you know, I have to protect you from yourself and Otto won't do it, he's kind of not 100% wrong, right?
Right.
Because under Otto's watch here as Hand of the King, it hasn't exactly gone perfectly. So, you know, there are cracks to pick at. And I really like
that. And even
stuff.
Like the king himself said, you know, Otto's bemoaning the fact that Damon's got this 2,000 strong army. And he's like, it's the one that you handed yeah. him, you yeah. know, as a way to keep him, you know, safely away from the affairs of state. And it's like all those things were Otto's idea. Master of law, master of coin.
Sure. But then Otto fires back, you know, I wanted him to send him away from here altogether. True. I didn't want him having anything to do with this council, but you got the soft spot for blood.
Does that work on a man like Damon, or does that just provoke a civil war?
Right.
A generation
and
early.
That's what I love, like, right? It's the complexity of the thing. It's like right. No decision is a great decision. And it shows also, I think, the characterization they did with Viserys in this first episode, with him having to make the tough choice about, does he try and save this baby, or does he just leave it to the gods and let them decide whether his wife and child die? And I felt like they set him up as a man who can make hard decisions in this first episode.
Right.
But when does he make those decisions? As a last resort, when it's already too late to fix the problems that indecision has caused? It's very complex, and I'm super interested in those characters.
I want to say a couple of things before we get too much further. Welcome to everybody just joining us. We got a lot of people in chat. Anything that you put into chat, if you're joining us live, we will get to in the instant talk portion after this, which is exclusively for club members, by the way. If you're wondering, like, what is this live show? How can I get into it? Support.baldmove.com. Join the club. And you too can have a little after show celebration with us every Sunday night for this season. And if you don't, that's cool too. You can send in an email to hotd@baldmove.com, HOTD, and we will consider all that feedback later in the week. Please, in this chat, please try to keep it spoiler free, because I know there's a lot of people that probably have read Fire and Blood or the Rogue Prince or the Princess and the Queen. We don't want to ruin that. This is a show first podcast. I've read all that stuff and I'm perfectly comfortable with dealing with that with Maester Anthony in our feedback show later on this week. But that's for hot D at baldmove.com. The chat is exclusively for spoiler free thoughts about tonight's episode. So definitely go ahead and queue up and start asking those questions. We're compiling it now. I want to talk about the, you know, a lot of people want to know, like, what was the Martin heresy that Aaron was talking about? It's that end scene, which felt like I said, you know, if you're a lore hound, you probably know all about Rhaegar Targaryen. He went into the library as a bookish poet, lover, lute playing Chad, but not much of a warrior. And he became obsessed with certain tomes, and he comes out there and he says, I'm going to need a sword and armor, because it turns out I'm supposed to be a warrior. And he came up with this theory, this Song of Ice and Fire, that he foresaw the doom of men. This, you know, happens long, you know, this is many, many years past where we're at in the time. We find out tonight that actually Aegon conquered Westeros, not for blood and glory and gold, although they were there for the taking, but that this was actually a vision that he had, chilling in Valyria, that the world is going to end at this great winter. This dark forces are going to march, and it's going to take all of Westeros united behind the Targaryens and their dragons to defeat it. That's you know, I've got a whole podcast that I recorded with Kim Renfro from The Insider and of a cast of Kings that we're going to drop immediately after this podcast where we talk about it. But that's the thing. And it's not a major earth shaking thing. In fact, I thought, you know, it happened so late. It was one of those things where I was like, man, is this wise to tie this show that tightly into Game of Thrones, knowing how that whole threat ended up and how people feel about that?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really connecting it there.
I wonder if there's an opportunity
that we see throughout Game of Thrones.
That's the cat's paw dagger, the one that Catelyn Stark grabs onto, that the cat's paw was there to kill Bran. It's the one that Arya jabbed the Night's King with. It's the blade of glory, the blade of fate. They're doing things with that, and it's something I think Kim and I wondered about. Is like, is there any way for them to come up with something? So obviously this is not the main thrust. Like the main thrust of the show is to talk about the Dance of Dragons, the beginning of the end of House Targaryen and Westeros. But yeah, can they come up with something so cool that it kind of semi-redeems or adds a lot more depth to the final two seasons of Game of Thrones?
I don't want to put that baggage on them. I don't think
the show does, though, because like I think that's a fair question for everybody.
They don't have to bring that up, right?
But it's a curious decision, because I think this show is strong enough that it doesn't need that. It doesn't need to tie into the main series any more than background for Dany and John, you know. Sure. But like they are doing that, and something I was completely unexpected. You get 55 minutes through this episode and it hit me with that, and I'm like, shit, I thought the spoiler would be essentially retired, and who knows what Valyrian tinfoil will be spun from the revelations we get. Cause George has got some stuff he wants to get out, apparently, through his vassal Ryan Condal.
Yeah. I was surprised at how hard this episode went. I expected like the aforementioned D section to be like the climax of the episode. And like they cut the baby out and then, you know, fade to black credits.
Yeah.
And I looked at the clock and I was like, oh, we have 20 minutes left. Wait, yeah, what?
Yeah. I agree. I felt like that at the same time. There's a couple points to where I thought, oh, we're here at the end. Oh, we're here at the end. Of course, I was in a theater. I didn't have my phone because they made me put it in a bag. So I had no idea. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what if this is just going to be the big thing that everybody's talking about, and then it's just kind of goes to a dull roar. But they got that knife on his belt. They got this retooled prophecy. We'll see what we make of it.
I bet I know what the 400,000 people who are going to be on YouTube right now, recording their videos right now to put on YouTube in about 45 minutes, the top 10 Game of Thrones references you missed from House of the Dragon yeah. season premiere. I've got like three or four of them listed.
Yeah.
I think they're explicitly doing homages. I feel like they started with the proper pronunciation of Dynasty, which I was happy to hear.
right.
The dance pronunciation, sure. Uh-huh. There's a scene where they start on a joke. They start on the punchline of a joke where like Viserys says, I think you might be looking at the wrong end.
Yeah.
That's a shout out to the joke in Game of Thrones that was never actually finished, right? But we got the setup for that joke. But never the punchline. Interesting.
Is that the one? That right? I know that Tyrion
with the
did
people
tell,
walking into the bar.
Right. Yeah, that actually might connect. I don't know. I didn't make that connect. Just like I said, this is only the second time I've seen this. If you missed our previews, we didn't get screeners for this other than the one I was invited to see out in L.A. So like I don't know. But yeah, I'll have to check into that now. Thanks for giving me homework, Jim.
Yeah, no problem. Always happy to help. Like you said, all that Dream of Winter stuff. I mean, that's straight out of Game of Thrones.
The other thing I thought was interesting from a more of a book kind of purist perspective is they showed the Godswood in King's Landing. And when we see that with Sophie Turner later in the series, in the Game of Thrones series, that's just a stump.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I've always considered it. I did look into it between, you know, me seeing it now. And apparently, at some point, the Godswood and King's Landing was intact, and all the Weirwoods south of the Neck, you know, the narrow isthmus that connects North Westeros to South Westeros, everything south of that, the North, they've all been cut down. And in the Godswood and King's Landing, supposedly it's a great white oak that has this thing called fire vine that grows up through it that gives it the appearance of a weirwood, but it's not a weirwood and doesn't have a face carved on it. This is manifestly a weirwood. It's got the carved face. It's got the red sap leaking out of the carving. I don't think that's not a huge change, but it is a change. And I wonder if it's going to, if that reflects something else, or if it's just an aesthetic that they wanted to. Obviously, they want to make as many connections to Game of Thrones fans' hearts to that old series or this series, and that might be another one of those.
Even down to like, you know, the sweeping shot over King's Landing. I mean, that immediately connects you. The song they're playing there is like has hints of the Game of Thrones theme in it, and then they hit you with basically the full theme at the end, except the choral version of it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like, you know, I don't think we ever we saw Daemon pull in a Jaime Lannister sitting upon the Iron Throne when he's not supposed to be. Did we ever see the Iron Throne cut someone in the show? Because they always alluded to that as being like, that's a sign of a bad king. If the Iron Throne's cutting you and drawing blood, and here it's not just cutting him, but it's infecting him, which is interesting. And the other thing is to connect back to Aegon's dream. I couldn't help but notice Viserys had a dream about a son being born with a crown and everyone exulting in him and all that. It's like, maybe the Targaryens' dreams just suck. Maybe the fact that the Great Winter came 300 some years after Aegon predicted it is just like a broken clock being right twice a day, you know? Like maybe the Targaryens don't really know all that much. Maybe their dreams and their visions or prophecies are just like, you know, the kind you find in the entertainment section of a newspaper, like your horoscope, you know? It's an idea I want to throw out there.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. One of the huge problems that and I didn't even notice it in this, the scene where the gold cloaks are kind of doing their terror raid of King's Landing right before they cut off the rapist's junk. There was in the audio mix that I saw in the theater an audible fart. The man fear farted. And I'm like, this is weird to throw in there. I didn't even hear it. Like, I don't know if my Sonos is not mixed. I need to turn the subwoofer up or not, or they just like decided that was a little too front and center.
That was just Elon Musk, two chairs down from you.
It's, yeah, he had a few. Yeah, you got a little gassy. You had a little too much broccoli for dinner. That was the one thing I mentioned in some of the things I did previews for. It's like, that's the one that's like, man, that didn't set right for me. And I didn't even notice it in tonight's mix. Did you even hear it?
I did not hear it. Everybody in chat saying they heard it, though. 100% verified. Fear fart.
Okay, the fart. How do we feel about the fear fart? Because I thought it was an odd. It's a very George Martin choice.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a weird one, as some of his choices. You know, we've all, if the book readers, we are all familiar with the fat pink mask, the mirrorish swamps. Sometimes George gets scatological and it's not the greatest. I wasn't a big fan, but that was the last time that I was worried on the episode. Everything from that was pretty good. And again, I think the highlight of tonight's was the juxtaposition of the valor of a women on the birthing bed versus the valor of the men, you know, playing at war in the jousting lists.
Dude.
And
I
just
do not know the rules of that tournament, but it seems like they were broken. It seemed like the rules were broken. As soon as you start killing people, tripping their horses, I don't know.
It felt like they made that a plot point that we saw Lord Corlys and his wife, the queen that never was, Rhaenys. Which they want to do Rhaenys, but I noticed the Lord Corlys is, nah, that's my wife and she's Rhaenys. Mm-hmm. She like anus with a raw Rhaenys. Yeah.
So that when we say our anus, if we're trying to say our Rhaenys is better than your anus.
Right.
We're going to have a real hard time not laughing. Yeah.
But they had that conversation with themselves. It's been 70 years since they've had, there's been a real battle in the land. Yes. These guys are essentially sex nuts, and got their blood up, and the carnage in the tournament, I don't think is supposed to represent like things happening normally, like a tourney is normal. It's just more
permissible. I don't know why no one stopped it. I guess
it's like every once in a while,
City Watch's commander going at it.
There's that, but every once in a while, it's like if you've seen the NFL playoffs, every once in a while, NBA playoff, every once in a while, there's bad blood and the refs just decide to swallow the whistle and shit happens, man. And it wouldn't fly in any other. The horse tripping in particular seemed like that's just egregious.
And then just letting him continue to compete. I don't get it. But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very effective at
setting him up as a huge asshole. And I hate
him. They did so many things, like the fact that like he ran over his own squire, turning around to get back to Sir Criston Cole there. I thought they did a lot.
He slapped away Criston Cole's hand once he was beat, like all that stuff.
Yeah. But you don't hate Matt Smith. He's not like a Joffrey type. But there's something about him that's. Okay, you're hating him.
Face. How was he ever a Doctor Who? Because I don't think you're meant to hate Doctor Who, but fuck me, he's got a hateable face.
You see him in a bow tie and a tweed jacket versus covered with blood and black armor and bat wings coming from his. It's a different look. And that's the thing. Like, I didn't think Matt Smith could be this badass. He's a beast.
Yeah.
He looks really good in the gold cloak. He looks really good in his black armor. He honestly looks really good butt naked. Like he's a lot thicker and sturdier than I was thinking from a Matt Smith.
Those wings on his helmet, they have to be a liability in a joust, right?
Or in battle. I always thought that armor is designed to kind of like deflect things away from vibe. This is just like, if you've got a battle axe aimed at this dude's head, it's just funneling into the cranium. Like maybe he's got a battle. Like this is the show version of his armor. And he's got like a battle version where the wings are smaller or something. But if you look at any of the art books of World of Ice, some of the stuff gets pretty fucking crazy. You saw in the High Towers, he's looking like a rook. A lot of these guys were looking very battle chess in their armor tonight. But that's another thing that I got from listening to Kim talk with Dave on Cast of Kings, is that one of the requests from Martin is that he wanted a little bit more colorful. He wanted a lot more flags and sigils and recognizable coats of arms and distinctive armor. He wanted the dragons to be distinctive. Like you noticed that Syraxes, Daemon's dragon at the end, the red worm. He's got this very long snaky neck, and Martin, I guess, has always conceived these dragons of like the Targaryens brought their dragons over, but they're not dragons alike. They're more like breeds of dog. Like, you know, you can scarcely believe a Saint Bernard is the same fucking creature as a Chihuahua, but there it is. I think we're going to see a lot more types of dragons, breeds of dragons, visually distinctive looking dragons than Dany had with her three. So that's kind of cool, too. And already you can see, you can see the difference in Syrax, which is the golden dragon that Rhaenyra rides, and Syraxes, the bloodworm, the red worm.
Yeah, I used to play as Syrax in Mortal Kombat 3, favorite character.
Yeah, so my Mortal Kombat 3 lore stops at 2, I think. So
yeah, all I'm saying is if he does have a smaller wings version of his helmet,
yeah,
he's at risk of looking like Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a bad look.
Yeah, man, the lighting in this show too. I like as hard as that birthing scene was to watch, I couldn't help but notice the lighting is just so beautiful. Every frame of that looked like some kind of pre-Raphaelite genius's medieval painting. It's just like everything was glowing. It was a stark, you know, the beauty of it was a stark relief to the violence that we're seeing, but everything looked good. Like all that, like natural lighting, all the giant torches. There's that one scene of like, think the Red Keep, where it's this giant spiral staircase that's just up and up and up. And you see all these lit, what do they call it? Cinchers, candelabras, braziers, swinging braziers. I thought that stuff was just really fucking cool. The whole Targaryen funeral custom I thought was awesome. I thought Rhaenyra putting the stank on Dracarys, rolling the R's, like that was, I guess that's another point of emphasis from the Valerian master, that they're really wanting to work on the dialogue. And I thought that Matt Smith and her looked really good delivering that very pretty long Valerian scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots to be excited about. Do we have anything more to talk? I mean, we've been going almost 30 minutes. Yeah, this is supposed to be the instant take. Uh-huh. It's a little bit, you know, I've had a little bit of a head start, but of course, we will be back on Tuesday with the full breakdown of the scene by scene breakdown and Jim and I's detailed thoughts and analysis after we've had a little bit more time to watch it and think about it some more. Thursday, we'll be back with the feedback episode. HotD@baldmove.com is how you contribute to that. And else, we're going to have some fun with our club members here in the instant talk portion, where they get to make their points and ask their questions. We'll get to as many of them as we can. And if that sounds like a good time, you can go to support.baldmove.com and get instant access to the archive, so you can hear what we talked about tonight. And maybe next week, you can join us around 10:15 Eastern after the episode airs. All right, let's get to the instant talk.